Hello, I'm Pat McCreary, Associate Deputy Director at the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and today I'm speaking with Deputy Chief Trevor DeRue as part of BJA's Body-Worn Camera podcast series. Deputy Chief DeRue joined the Calgary Police Service in Calgary, Alberta, Canada in 1991 and currently leads the Bureau of Community Policing, including all uniformed patrol members deployed in seven districts, the traffic section, support section, and the community and youth sections. The Calgary Police Service implemented a body-worn camera pilot program in 2012 and has since expanded the program to outfit all frontline officers with body-worn cameras. Deputy Chief DeRue, thank you for speaking with me today. And if you would introduce Staff Sergeant Asif Rashad, that would be great. And then we'll turn to questions shortly.
Great. Thanks, Pat. Happy to be here, and thanks for having us. I have with me Staff Sergeant Asif Rashid. He is our not only our project coordinator for the body-worn cameras, but also the implementation coordinator. So he'll be the one that's responsible for physically implementing the 1,100 cameras that we will be deploying to the front line.
Good afternoon, Pat, and thanks for having us.
Great. Glad to have you, Asif. Well, let me start with, can you explain how you've gone about developing a draft body-worn video policy and training program?
Yeah, that's been, it's been probably one of the biggest challenges and probably the most important task. One of the things I would say right out front is we are in draft, I think, 23 now of our policy. And I say that because and I don't think we'll ever be finished with respect to how it goes. It's a policy that the evergreen philosophy certainly applies here. So one of the biggest challenges I think that we saw was, especially in Canada, this is uncharted territory. This hasn't happened anywhere else. We've got no court rulings with respect to the use and the use of these cameras. So it really became looking at other jurisdictions. And in 2012, when we started the pilot, very little information was available. So we ran a pilot from 2012 to 2013. One of the initial challenges for our policy was the privacy considerations, of course, versus operational needs. And so throughout our policy as it's being drafted, that's one of the constant considerations that we made when we start talking about the use of these cameras. Probably one of the more controversial ones, and I know reading the information from other places, the UK, the US, as well as here, is the use in a dwelling house and recognizing the enhanced privacy considerations around something like a private dwelling house. How is that going to be used? So that was one of the areas that we actually explored quite a bit. We had a number of different legal opinions here, and what we ended up really recognizing is that there are really no cases that discuss the actual use of that in a dwelling house. So we've landed on probably what most agencies have, if that is if you're lawfully placed and you would normally be taking notes, the expectation is that that camera will be on. The other probably controversial issue, one of the other ones, was discretion, whether the officers had the discretion to turn it on and off. And that leads to a whole host of issues is if the officers have that discretion. There's people out there, some of the citizens, who say, well, they'll just simply turn it off if there's going to be misconduct. So how does this enhance transparency and accountability for police? We, for a number of reasons, have chosen that discretion will be there, just like it's the officer's discretion with respect to when they take notes and what part of an incident will be covered in their notebook. So the officers, though, and part of their training will be determining why and explaining why they chose to turn it on, and be prepared, as we tell them, when they're testifying in court to explain why they actually turned it off as well, or if they do choose to turn it off. One of the other areas – sorry, go ahead, Pat.
Go right ahead.
One of the other points, and I know reading some of the things in San Diego, some of the concerns expressed there was with respect to note-taking procedures. And this was one of the areas that we explored very early on. And you know, there's talk, and even across this country, whether officers should be allowed to review the video before they actually make their notes. What we've landed on is the officers will be, as they would any other time, make the notes as the incident is occurring. And that really came to us as a result of our pilot project, because we learned that officers thought they had the video on or the camera on, and in fact it wasn't, or they thought that the camera was capturing audio, video, and in some cases, like a licensed premise, of course, the noise actually precluded that from being captured. So it, as they normally would, we say, and kind of the philosophy is, this does not replace good note-taking, and in fact, it's there to enhance it. So our procedure will be, they'll take notes at the time, return back to the office after the incident, or when they get back to the office, they'll download the video, they'll review the video, and they'll make supplemental notes. Part of the go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think your observations are really will be appreciated by the field. You're the first interviewee, that has described your policy somewhat as a living policy that's changing as need requires. I think that's a good concept for folks that are contemplating implementing a body-worn camera program.
Yeah, I think it is. I think when you look around the UK, the US, and us as well, it's so new that I think we have to be prepared to change and evolve as even with court rulings. As court rulings come, I think we're going to have to adjust our policies as well. So the other, probably one of the concerns with reviewing the notes or doing initial notes and then having to review them or reviewing the video is trying to account for discrepancies. And that's going to be part of their training. Through our pilot project, we've seen officers testify, we use it in car digital video as well, where the officer will say, you know, that individual had a blue jacket on, review the notes or review the video, and then recognize that that jacket wasn't blue, it was in fact red. So their training will include accounting for those discrepancies, or if the video depicts the event as they recall it and as they accounted in their initial notes, they'll make note of that as well.
You know, I just wanted to, if I may, Pat, one of the biggest challenges for myself as the project leader operationalizing the implementation of our program is, at the outset, some 3 years ago, is defining what is the operational need to have body-worn cameras, and I think that's a question that other agencies contemplating the same need to consider. Because your operational need, i.e., is this an evidence-gathering tool or is it a performance management tool, will ultimately depict how prescriptive or how discretionary your policy is going to be, what your training is going to look like, and what your engagement model with internal and external stakeholders is going to look like as well. So I think defining the need of the technology within the agency is paramount before forging ahead.
Well, that's a good comment. And I would expect for many agencies, it very well may be a blended solution to help both with, you know, officer safety, community engagement, as a recording tool as well for to help with prosecution.
And then also I was just going to say, just to expect what the unintended consequences of deployment are going to be as well. You know, what are the metrics of the functionality of the technology in the deployment? Is it going to be a real benefit to the police agency and the community as well? These are all considerations that need to be defined prior to operationalizing a program like this.
Great point. Well, let me turn to a second question for either Deputy Chief or Staff Sergeant. What would you identify or discuss as the biggest challenge you experience in implementing your body-worn camera program?
You know, I think one of the biggest issues that we've faced in Canada, and we have the luxury of leveraging the experience of some 18,000 law enforcement agencies in the U.S., some of our partners and brothers and sisters down there have great experience in deploying these programs over the last 2 or 3 years. In Canada, we're kind of pioneers in this regard. You know, we're the largest police jurisdiction in Canada that's taking it to full-blown deployment in our area. And one of the differences we found was the issue of shared versus individual use of the cameras. Speaking with our partners in the United Kingdom, they since revised their policies as well, but at the outset, they were equipping their officers with cameras on a shared deployment. So a group of 20 or so officers would come in for a shift, for example, and take out a camera only if it was available. And they found that when they altered their policy and when they went to individual deployment of their cameras, They were finding that officers were taking, A, better care of their cameras, compliance with policy increased, and in fact, they were capturing more video and video of a better quality. There was accountability and ownership in the type and amount of video that they were capturing. So that's one of the biggest differences we found between the UK and our own deployment model. But again, they've since revised their practice there as well.
Oh, that's interesting as well. How about in developing your program, you reached out to law enforcement agencies again in the United Kingdom and the United States. What would you share as the biggest implementation differences that you found between the UK, US, and how they compare to Canada?
Well, I think the fact that it was so new here, I think, has been one of the biggest challenges. And it hadn't been used in Canada, and it was really gaining acceptance, not only public acceptance, but also from the members themselves. So I think that was one of the things, and Asif mentioned it earlier, was really what is the purpose for these cameras? And some of the associations of the unions, the police unions and the members themselves across Canada were rejecting them initially because they said this is really just a performance management tool. So it was really about going about, and I think there was a lot of resistance across this country for that initially, but I think once the members themselves, certainly in Calgary has been our experience, they accepted the fact that this does enhance their ability to present the facts as they're demonstrated. And in fact, through the transparency, it eliminates a lot of the complaints or a lot of the false allegations that were made against officers. So it is brand new. So a lot of these bridges that we were crossing over, I think both the UK and the US had transferred or crossed much earlier than us.
Oh, that's great. How about looking ahead to the future of body-worn camera programs? What do you envision being some of the biggest issues surrounding the cameras and some of the associated technology?
Well, one of the things that I would say, and we're seeing this now with our Crown prosecutors and our prosecutors, the whole court procedures, we have very stringent disclosure requirements in Canada, and one of the challenges, so what would have taken would be a real minor offense and would take minimal prep time for the Crown prosecutor can now take, if you can imagine, if I just had to read one piece of paper in preparation for trial, sometimes these were done minutes before the actual court case. Now I've got 5 body-worn camera videos that I have to review, and the prosecutors certainly aren't going to be willing to take a matter to court when they haven't actually viewed those videos before. So that's been, I think that's going to be one of the big challenges. And that same preparation time will be reflected in our individual officers as well, because, again, they can prepare for court by reading through their notebook, but now they actually have to have reviewed the video, as I said earlier, being able to account for any discrepancies and be able to explain those. So you can see that whole court preparation time being increased. The other part, I think, is, you know, one of the ones that's interesting, and we watch learn a lot of this from the U.S., is the public ready to see parts of policing that they really haven't seen before? And I think that's going to be a really interesting example as we go forward. You know, there's parts of policing that are certainly glamorous, and the public sees those in media, or they'll see it in TV shows or things like that. But now they're going to be exposed to parts of policing that they maybe haven't seen before.
I think that goes to your point about policies being flexible and those considerations being thoughtfully contemplated with appropriate stakeholders to come up with appropriate policy for the individual community that you serve. I think that makes good sense.
And that's a really good point, I think. And this is one of the things we stress when we talk to a lot of people, is the fact that, yeah, what maybe works in this community, even not only in this country, but in this city of Calgary, may not work in other places. And I think it's important to recognize that there will be some differences. One of the other challenges as we move forward, and it's interesting because this comes up, I was speaking with some of our frontline officers yesterday, and the thought that if it isn't captured on video, it didn't occur. And so, you know, we've experienced that in the courts for years with respect to notes. Well, if it's not captured in your notebook, it didn't happen. And now more and more we're starting to see, or I think we'll see as we move forward, that if an officer didn't engage their video or doesn't have video, will that be accepted, their testimony be accepted by itself. But I would argue that that exists today anyway. Most of our officers recognize that what they do. You know, we're in a city of 1.2 million people. When our officers are working, they're likely being recorded anyway. And I think the courts are starting to rely more and more on video as we move forward. So while that is probably a concern as we move forward, I think it's one that has little to do with the fact that police actually capture body-worn video as opposed to the fact that it's so readily available.
And I think similarly, agencies have to be mindful that you can't rely exclusively on body-worn cameras as well, because there are certain elements that the camera won't capture, social, psychological stimulants in the environment the officers are operating in. And there will be increased pressure on the officers to articulate some of those things that weren't captured in the video in a court-type setting.
One of the things, and I'll say this because it was brought up by our police commission, one of the police commission members that I hadn't heard in all the conversations we had, and we're going to try and actually measure it as we deploy, is the lack of discretion employed by officers for minor offenses. And one of the examples given, so there's, you know, in Canada it's still illegal, of course, marijuana is illegal. So there's a joint in a house, and our members are in the house. In the past, they would generally, it doesn't matter what policy is, they would probably get rid of that, use their discretion with respect to that, whatever it is, whether it's drugs or something like that. They would apply that discretion. Now that it's captured on video, will the officers be less hesitant or more reluctant to actually use that discretion? And how is that going to play out with the public's trust and confidence? Because I would argue that the public gains trust and confidence in the police because they are seen as being, when they are seen as being fair, and discretion is often equates to that fairness, their perception of fairness. So it's something we're going to look at because it was honestly something we'd never considered before, and it'll be interesting to see as we move forward.
That's a great point, and even though we haven't touched on it, I know when BJA had its expert panel with over 100 people that have implemented programs, including the UK and Canada, the role of the district attorney or the prosecutor is really key. And I would think that coordination regarding that last discretionary discussion would be key. So if the prosecutor and the law enforcement agency is on the same page so that we're what would be considered reasonable action by a law enforcement officer and exercising that discretion would be key.
Exactly. Yeah. And just one more, I think challenge is going to be, with respect to when officers forget to turn the video on and the fallibility, I think of memory and I think the realization that memory isn't, as accurate as once thought. And I think that's going to play out in the courts and be quite interesting because when they don't turn that on and the court has, the judges have listened to, many cases where what the officer initially saw and then what the video depicted are significantly different. So I think it'll be interesting to monitor as we go forward is it fallibility of memory? Is it someone that's being untruthful on the stand or is it in fact just that, just a mistake?
That's a good point. I have two questions left. Now, let me hit the next one. What is the most important advice you would give an agency considering implementation of a body-worn camera program?
I would say from an acceptance perspective, really the focus on, and Steve talked about earlier, the purpose of the camera. I think you can have great technology. I think you can have really strong policy. And I think if your membership doesn't accept the use of these cameras, I think you're going to have a lot of problems. And I think so it's really important to go out and have the members recognize, the frontline police officers recognize the value of this piece of technology, value for capturing evidence, value for, with respect to enhancing the public's trust, confidence, and transparency. you know, even enhancing officer accountability and professionalism. And one of the things that we see as well is the ability to de-escalate situations once they're recorded. And they de-escalate, as, you know, the research is showing on both sides, the officer side as well as the citizens. I think there's great value to individual police officers. I think there's a danger when they see it as only a disciplinary tool. Having said that, of course, it will be used as that. It will be used as training and disciplinary as well. But I think it's really important to come out with a strong description of the advantages to using these type of technology.
Go right ahead.
I was going to say, I think the overarching theme is that the agency would have to support a culture of change within the organization. And how do you do that? I mean, just, you know, thinking back to 3.5 years that we've been engaged in this, is ensuring that you're identifying the appropriate stakeholders both within and outside of the agency, that you continue to engage them on an ongoing basis. And as Deputy Drew said, be flexible in your approach. Have that evergreening approach and have a standing committee that meets on a regular basis to talk about operational considerations, case law as it emerges, and continually revising and updating the policy based on the feedback that you're getting from your membership and the community as well.
And I would Great. Just, final point, if I could, is stakeholder engagement. And we started out certainly with the pilot with limited engagement, and you learn very quickly or how vast the interdependencies become and how many systems, whether it's internal or external systems, this touches. So I think it's important to get that engagement out very soon on it.
No, that's great. You may have covered this, but let me give you one last question, an opportunity for you to emphasize any other point. If you were going to start your body-worn camera program over from the beginning, based on what you've learned, what would you do differently?
One of the things I would say, and we've actually started, we have provinces here in Canada, of course, very similar to the states that you have, but within the province, we've started a steering committee looking at what are some of the legislative changes that we can make within the province. Can we have body-worn camera legislation, for instance? And that could eliminate a lot of the risks and challenges that we talked about very early on with respect to note-taking, with respect to discretionary use, disclosure, you know, announcing whether you have to turn it, when you have to announce before you turn it on or turn it off, mandatory use for officers that are trained, you know, individual versus shared deployment. I think the more that you can cover in that type of, in our case, would be provincial legislation, the better. And we probably should have started that earlier. We're looking at, can we legislate this? And if you can't, we have provincial standards, as you would have state standards around the use of, and then after that would be policy and then standard operating procedures. I think the more of these arguments that you can put into legislation or the more of these issues that you can address through legislation, it'll make it a lot easier in during courts proceedings and you know, less of a challenge for the individual officers to have to address these kind of more controversial issues. Retention, you know, length of retention periods, things like that could be included in that legislation.
I'm really glad you made that comment and response. BJA has found, looking at our research and pending legislation and different states' actions, and it seems apparent that states that are taking action like you are in your Canadian provinces that are looking at a statewide kind of guidance for the field along with tying in the prosecution piece, because you can imagine if different agencies within a state or a province just goes out and buys their own cameras, you know, haphazardly, you might have an event on a borderline of a jurisdiction and multiple agencies responding. And clearly a prosecutor wants to be able to access the information. And so we think states that do that are going to be ahead of the game. So that's a great comment. Let me thank you, Deputy Chief Daru, and Staff Sergeant Asif Rashad. We're very grateful you could speak with us today and share your knowledge on this important topic. We encourage law enforcement, justice, and public safety leaders whose agencies are interested in learning more about the implementation of body-worn camera programs to visit the body-worn camera toolkit at www.bja.ca. gov/BWC. This toolkit offers a variety of resources that agencies can use to help with adoption and use for community engagement, police development, data collection, officer training, and educational purposes. We also encourage listeners to share and promote these resources with your colleagues and staff. Lastly, all of these resources, and especially the body-worn camera toolkit, have been designed as a national resource, your resource. So please submit your ideas for new content through the body-worn camera support link at the bottom of the homepage. This is Pat McCreary, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, signing off. Thank you to our listeners for joining us today.